Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello! I'm Trish Halpin.
And I'm Lorraine Candy.
Welcome to Postcards from Midlife, the show where we help you through the midlife, the menopause, motherhood, and everything in between.
Trish, what's been happening to you this week?
Well, I always have a tube story, don't I?
Yeah, you seem to be travelling to lots of places.
I'm going a lot of places, and I sort of think it's a really good place for sort of observing life and finding out interesting things about people. And this week I had a little light bulb episode where I thought, oh my God, thank God, being the age we are, we don't have to do these like modern hen do's where you all have to kind of pack off and travel abroad. I was listening to these two lovely young ladies, and one of them, she was obviously the bride, and she was regaling a list of instructions. The lovely bride, she wanted a villa in the south of France. She didn't want any feathers or penises anywhere near the vicinity. Just lots of lovely, lovely rosé wine. Very likely. So I was thinking, goodness, what's wrong with just a kind of boozy old night at a nightclub? I don't know.
Well, you know what changed it, don't you?
What was it?
Instagram.
Oh, right.
So boozy old you and me dancing to ABBA till 2 o'clock in the morning is not Instagrammable at all.
Oh, I see. Right, okay.
But nice villa in the south of France, that is Instagram. That's your social media.
Yeah,
that's
changed. And then the kind of brides on tour t-shirts and all of that. Anyway, one of the things about being our age is so glad we didn't have to go through that. And have you been on the tube this week, Rain? Anything interesting happened to you?
I do like a trip on the tube, but I'm usually listening to a podcast, Trish. Okay. I tell you what I've been doing this week. I found a book called Slow Moon Climbing.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, okay. It's quite interesting. It's an academic book. It's written by a historian. So I read it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I haven't read it all, obviously. I've dipped into it. But it put forward a new theory about the middle of your life. Now, one of the things that this podcast is about is busting the myths and all the things women didn't tell us. So the myth is you're broken, you need to be fixed. I'm blaming the patriarchy for that, I think. Women in their midlife, they're broken, they need to be fixed. It's the end. Women's hell, it used to be called, or a slow woman's death, it used to be called in the 1800s. But actually, the point of the book is that from a kind of studying people point of view, what we were supposed to do was have our children, get that out of the way, so we could be incredibly useful to the rest of society and do brilliant things in this stage of our life. And somehow the whole narrative has changed to us being a bit broken, something wrong with us,
not having any value anymore, I suppose. I suppose the interesting thing as well is what midlife back then would have been a totally different age.
Because it would.
Probably life expectancy would have been, so 30s would have been midlife, wouldn't they? So,
but in a way, it doesn't really matter, does it? It's just this idea that it's a rebirth, it's a reset, it's new, and it's the time when we can do something else and we can be useful, and we should have all this energy and we should get it all back and be able to use it. That kind of, I really just liked the idea of that.
Definitely claim that, reclaim that. And, so slow moon climbing. What does slow moon climbing mean?
Don't know.
Haven't worked that out? Okay, haven't got to that bit yet.
No, no. You know, I like to dip in and out of an academic book, as you know. Anyway, so the other thing we are talking about today is the midlife muffin top.
Yes.
Now, this is all linked to hormones. And your body, it's true, medically, on the research I've done and things I've written about this, your body changes shape. So you get thicker round the middle, which is not enjoyable.
And back fat. Bit of thick around the middle.
What are you about to show me?
Well, I know, I'm sort of grabbing these bits at the back there. Bit of back fat, lower back fat. Anyway, squidgy bits. But it's a lot to do, isn't it, with weight gain. And it's not as simple as calories in and calories out.
Not anymore,
because it's all about hormonal complications and fluctuations in estrogen, progesterone. And basically, we end up with an increased appetite and kind of just more fat. We gain more fat, don't we?
And the changing of the muscle tone. And It's that thing, isn't it? So I've got an 8-year-old, and when she gets on my lap, sometimes she'll go, "Ooh, squidgy bits, squidgy bits,
my soft bits." That's quite comforting.
It's nice to hear her say it, but it's not
sitting on a stick.
I know, but it's not, you don't want to be going, "Ooh, squidgy bits, nice soft bits," when you're trying something on in a changing room, do you?
No,
not squidgy. Then becomes muffin top, annoys me, makes me a bit depressed.
Yeah,
I think sometimes your self-esteem and confidence is a bit happier when you're in a happier weight place.
Yeah,
and it's tied to women's self-esteem. It's not all bad, though, because some of the pieces I've read, fat tries to create estrogen in the body, and that's kind of what we need a little bit more of. So we do need that. We need the good fat. We don't need sugar, and the advice would be cutting down on carbs. If you're worried about your middle bit, you might not be worried about it. I mean, it doesn't really matter. But apparently we put on between 5 and 10 grams of weight during the years of menopause, according to studies. And protein is probably more where you should go if you're worried about that. And the reason it is a worry, and it's not just body shape, and we're not all falling prey to, we've all got to look younger. It's nothing to do with that. It's a worry to be overweight because of the cancer risk and the other risks associated with the hormone changes. And also your loss of bone mass at this age as well. So it is good to reduce it if you can.
It's also because of where the fat is that this is the issue. Because, you know, in sort of puberty to perimenopause, we're kind of tending to store fat in our sort of hips and thighs.
I wish I'd worn a bikini a lot more in my younger years.
This type of fat doesn't increase your risk of things like cancer and heart disease, but the fat you put on in this life stage, it's visceral, it's around your organs, and I think that is. So we do have to be a bit more careful about maintaining the weight.
For our health, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And there is kind of, as well as hormones, there are four other factors here. You mentioned weight, bone mass and density, and the exercise, but sleep as well, because poor sleep leads to increased stress, which can lead to metabolic problems.
Biscuits for me.
Exactly.
Hobnobs, chocolate hobnobs and tea at 4 o'clock.
Exactly. You might stuff down a load of hobnobs. But we should mention metabolism as well, because that's why fad diets or extreme diets really don't work, because the sort of sudden and significant calorie reduction is just going to cause a decrease in muscle mass, which will then make your metabolism slow down even further and affect your bone density. So
it's just silly at any age. I agree.
So it's the old sensible eating, and it sounds so boring, doesn't it?
Yeah. But I can't make it sexy. I can't do anything.
It's
a thing. Middle-aged spread is a thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a medically recognised thing.
And have you found your appetite's changed at all? Are you hungrier?
No, I'm not hungry.
You're not hungry.
I'm not massively hungry. I've got terrible food problems, obviously, you know, because I can't eat beetroot. You know the list.
and the shellfish,
the root vegetables I will cross the road to avoid.
Yeah, yeah.
But the hobnobs I am liking. Mm, yeah.
Yeah.
Got to be in the fridge, though.
Chocolate every day. Chocolate every day. Got to have it. Okay, so let's hear from our special guest, TV and radio presenter, Beverly Turner. Beverly has presented shows as wide-ranging as Formula One to Travel and Cookery, and recently hosted a very successful LBC radio show. She also set up an antenatal service called the Happy Birth Club and wrote the Happy Birth book with midwife Pam Wild. She is divorced and has a 16-year-old son and two daughters aged 10 and 8. Welcome, Beverly.
So, welcome, Beverly Turner.
Thank you.
Postcards from Midlife. Now, you have a 16-year-old and then you have two younger children who are heading towards the teenage years. But you are a single parent.
I am.
So your story is very different from mine and Trish's story. Mm. How different has single parenting been to married parenting? And what do you think you're most proud of?
I think amongst my friends who are similarly single parenting, you realise it's not that different than it was before. And that's possibly one of the reasons why you do end up divorced. Because I think men are much better at, let's say, focusing on what it is that they want to do. And we continue to do everything else. I
mean, the practicalities. You know,
the practicalities. But there are practicalities that I do single-handedly now that James would have shared with me before. So he was very good at breakfast. And so doing the 6:37 7 days a week, that kills me.
It's kind of relentless with three children, I would think, with the uniforms and all the stuff you've got to get ready.
It's relentless. And the space in my head. I think that was never different. I've always carried everything around in my own head that the children needed to do. But I guess it's just sometimes having another pair of hands. You know, one of you does the, you know, rinses the dishwasher or the breakfast bowls while the other one throws the uniform on. Or, you know, at bedtime, one of you can be tidying up the kitchen from dinner while the other one's reading the stories. It's, you've got to be in two places at once, and it's just impossible.
Do you use your teenager to help you? Because I've been, when my husband's away, my 17-year-old, she can actually be quite helpful. I mean, you have to say what to do, and then you have to say, can you flush the toilet as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think the key was possibly in the word she. My teenager is a boy, and therefore there's always a bit of resistance, which is something that I am desperate to work on, because I want to create a husband and father to go out into the world and to right all the wrongs of the previous generation. But that is incredibly difficult. And I don't know whether it is that it's the behaviour that they see modelled, or whether it is just something within them, genetic. But my girls will instinctively say, can I help you, mummy? And I remember the littlest...
Well, they're not teenagers yet.
They're not teenagers yet. But I think I realised quite early on that I needed to set the precedent. There's quite a big age gap. There's 6 years between Croyd, my eldest, and Kiki, my middle one. And it was almost like when I made all my mistakes with him, like you do. And then with the second two, I thought, no, I have to set the precedence early with parenting. Whatever it is you want them to do, whether it's clean their teeth twice a day or tidy up their bedrooms, you've got to sow those seeds when they're little, and then it comes to fruition, hopefully, when they're teenagers. But hindsight is a wonderful thing, of course.
And how have you found, you mentioned the age gap, so parenting a teen versus parenting 8 to 10-year-old?
I think, as you mentioned, I work with pregnant women who haven't had a baby yet, and they are a joy to be around, because they sit in my antenatal classes and they have no idea what's coming, and there's only so much preparation you can give them. But they are so lucky in that they have their tribe as new mums and as a mum of teenagers. You don't have that. You're all getting on with your own lives.
Lonely.
You don't see them. It is really lonely. You don't see the mothers of the teenagers as you did when they were toddlers. You don't have WhatsApp groups talking about the feeding pattern or whatever it is. And so it is really lonely. And I think also there's a sense of kind of embarrassment and shame with mothers of teenagers, and that we don't necessarily admit if our son has thrown the remote control across the room.
There's a lot of things you can't tell. We've talked about this before, Trish. You can't tell people. Also, they have told you not to tell anyone.
Yeah, that's right. You have to consider their boundaries, because they believe they're adults. They're not. They're, especially that 15, 16, I think, is fascinating. 1 minute they sort of want their teddy, and the next minute they want independence to go to the movies. And 1 minute, you know, they think you're horrendous and they hate you. And the next minute they're coming up for a cuddle. It's like living with a complete psycho lunatic.
Yeah.
And that's very, very lonely, because there isn't really anybody to talk to about it. And you have to be careful what you confess, because this isn't necessarily the case in my case, but I know some of my friends whose teenage sons have, you know, I've got into drugs or got into with the police. Yeah. Does that mother tell you? Because then you may not want your son to go and play with that kid.
Well, that's the shame, isn't it?
On
the
my
shame
street,
and guilt,
you know?
Yeah. That you feel in this. And also, I think at this point, so you're 47 now.
40s. How old am I? 46.
46. Sorry.
Let me keep that year, Lorraine. Do not take that 1 year away
year
from me.
Year on to your life by accident. So you're 46. And you'll be heading into, I'm just saying this, you'll be heading into your perimenopause at some point, and you might go slightly mad, you might get very hot. Lots of things may happen. There's, how many symptoms are there, Trish?
34, I think. 34.
Metabolism slows down.
All of
sex
that.
Sex drive goes, all that, yeah.
So that's like a perfect storm with teenagers in the house. You're going to have two teenage girls coming up towards you at that point. What do you think will be difficult for you as a single parent compared to a kind of a couple heading through that time of life? What do you envisage?
I don't know. I have this amazing app called Hormone Horoscope, which changed my life. I wrote an article about it a couple of years ago and tried it out for a month, and it has been transformative.
What does it do?
It tracks your cycle. If you still have regular cycles, which, fingers crossed at the moment, I do, you can track your cycle and how your mood will be on those particular days, and therefore you can let yourself off the hook if you want to, you know, throw the child, you know, through the front window. You can realise that that's why you want to do it, because you are premenstrual or whatever it is. And so I will give my teenage girls that particular app, which applies to teenagers. That she, Gabrielle Lichterman, who started it, is a health journalist in America. It's an amazing resource. And she has a teenage version for girls.
We'll be all over that, won't we?
It's phenomenal.
Definitely, I'm writing it down.
And it will help the girls understand why they feel certain ways at certain times. Even things like appetite, energy, focus, fatigue.
So you're planning this.
So I'm all braced.
You're ahead of the game.
But of course, once I do become perimenopausal, what the heck is going to happen to my hormones? I do worry about that. But I think as a single mum, how do I handle it? I think I have my allies. I have my sister. My mum is amazing. My female friends, my netball team. But it's hard. I'm not going to lie to you. It's really hard. The emotional load is enormous.
And do you find that do your children behave differently? Do they give you some slack because you're a single parent?
Or
do they play on it?
Completely the opposite.
It's the opposite, right.
I think it's completely the opposite. I mean, we're a year separation now, and I think they're probably still quite cross with me. And so they will fluctuate again, the girls. It's, you know, they can be take out their anger on me a bit about the situation. They probably don't know they're doing it. And I think we have to be careful not to be sort of hyper-vigilant to that kind of behaviour and read into it, because you think, well, you know,
preempt something that's not happening.
Yeah, you know, maybe they'd be treating me like that anyway, but, you know, if we hadn't separated. Yeah. So you have to kind of not be too paranoid or guilt. It's the guilt kicks in, because you see a child misbehave and we blame ourselves and we think it must be something that I've done.
Because I'm at work, because I'm menopausal.
Yeah, because I left their dad.
Because there's a D in the months.
Yeah.
How do you ask for support? Because I think that's one of the things that when you reach this stage of slightly lonely parenting and you can't ask or tell everyone, you've got to ask for support and you've got to work out who. And then you've also, I think, got to work out how to say no, haven't you? Because a lot is asked of us at this age.
Yeah.
And I'm quite good at saying, I'm not coming to that. I don't want to do that. If I have to bring four of them, that will be a nightmare. Yeah. Can I just bring two of them?
Yeah.
Like, I'm quite good at that. But I know a lot of women struggle with the no thing. And when you're, but I discuss it with my husband. So we agree that you've got to make all that decisions on your own.
One of the things that I've started to do recently is with keeping my lists is prioritising what is important.
So you write them down.
I have my little paper book here that I have on the desk. I'm old school. I like a book. I like to be able to see it and flick through. And if the battery's flat, it's still there. And I will put my to-do list, which is never ending, into categories. So I will have one category that might be house, one is kids, one is work. Remember that? You know, and therefore, even at the end of the day, if I can see that I've ticked off a couple from each category, I feel like I'm winning. If I just have a 52-point list, it's too overwhelming. So breaking it down into what is important, that really, really helps. And also, then you can actually look if there's anything you can delegate. So I might say to my mum, like, for instance, I have some problems. It's so inane, but this is the stuff we live, isn't it? Things like, I'm not on the best rates for my utility bills. When am I going to get the time to save myself the money that I need every month? The kind of job my mother would love. So I look at my list and I go,
oh, send her round.
Mum, you know, would you mind looking at my utility bills? Oh, drop off the folders. I'd love to. She gets a highlighter out and then she'll go and look at the rates. And then you can just gently, I think, ask,
take that
who can help you? And women are brilliant. And the thing is, the benefit of children being older is that if you do need to farm them out to another family for the night, it's not like trying to give them a baby.
No, you know, or three small babies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you can give them, you know, a teenager, or you can say to them, do you mind if your teenager comes and stays the night with my teenager, because I'm going to be out, but I don't really want him on his own.
Yeah.
But if there's a sensible one, you pick the sensible one. We know, but they come. But it's the communication. I spend all day WhatsApping people, trying to negotiate and organise my life.
How do you look after yourself in this process? Because I think in order to be really there for your kids, to be emotionally supportive and to be able to maintain the discipline, you've got to feel well and you've got to feel good. So how do you have any me time?
I mean, look, today I've come running in here. I think I've had two bananas to eat today and I came through the door desperate for a coffee. That's a terrible example of a day in which I've just not looked after myself at all. I try and walk. I'm a big fan of walking, so I go everywhere in flat shoes. It's my saviour. And if I just, even if I think, right, I've got to get off the tube one stop earlier and get that fresh air. You know, I've been known to have meetings in London in the summer where I'll walk, and it's a 2.5 hour walk. But I think if I can put a rucksack and my trainers on and walk with my phone, I can work, make work calls, organise all that stuff.
Travels with Beverly.
Travels with Beverly. Beverly.
Yeah. Quite like the thought
I'd
of Beverly.
Love that.
Wandering across London.
And I love my netball. So I have my, I got into this about 4 or 5 years ago. Some moms from school dragged me along. I think I was having a tough day. Come and play netball on a Friday morning. Oh, all right. And now I'm on a team. So nothing gets in the way of my netball. I do that on a Tuesday night. And it is my therapy because I think it's in psychological terms what they call a flow activity. Mm. So when you completely immerse yourself in it and you can't think about your to-do list, you know, you're playing netball, if you're not concentrating on the game, you get a ball in your face or you let your team down. It's not like going for a run where I'm still thinking about everything. And I swim, I love swimming. I know you do as well, Lorraine, don't you?
I love swimming. No one can get to you, talk to you, and they've got to get in that water and they won't.
It's the equivalent of a birthing pool. There's a reason why birthing pools are popular. It's because nobody can touch you when you're giving birth in water. And it's the same thing. I love my... But, you know, do I do it every week? I do my netball, but I don't always make time for the other things.
Mm-hmm. And what about... You're trying to expand your antenatal business at the moment. How's that panning out for you and how are you finding the time to do that?
Some days we're very productive. Some weeks we're productive. Some weeks we're not very good at all. And I've just reconciled myself to the fact that we can't do everything. And you're working with pregnant couples. They are precious and they are vulnerable and you have to get it right. And so we've got that right now and we're now just looking for the people to expand it to.
I guess for you that's quite poignant in a way, isn't it? So you're seeing couples coming in at their most loving, having sleep, haven't had the baby yet, don't know what's coming at them, don't know what's coming at them there, don't know what's coming at women as they get older in midlife. And then you're in that phase of your life where you're on your own. And
just list the opposite of what you've just said. Yeah. Embittered, tired, run down.
I think though that there is, I've got friends who are going through divorces in the middle of their life, their midlife bit. And actually they are quite hopeful in a way. They're women who they've kind of starting another journey.
Yeah.
Can you do that? Can you, or is your focus, because teenagers need quite a lot of support, just on them and you're on hold, your new journey, your new life, is that on hold?
I've got one doing GCSEs next year. I've got another one doing 11 plus exams in January. It's immersive at the moment. It's full on. I like to think that when I'm 18 months post-separation, the dust will have settled a little. I will know what the children are going to do for the next stage of their life. And that at the moment, that does have to take priority, unfortunately. I would love to wake up every morning and just sit at a computer and write books and just flounce around and run antenatal classes. And, you know, that's not where I am at all. But I am optimistic for that point in my life.
Yeah.
I am excited about that. I'm not scared by that.
So your advice, I guess, for people at the same stage would be there is a way that have some optimism. I mean, what's the one thing do you think you remember that when you were splitting up, that starting again, that you could give as advice to people?
I think I had this really profound sense that we have one life and we deserve to be happy. I think that's the biggest thing. The women forget that. We forget that so easily. When we're basically living a life of service, which is what being a mother is, you forget that your happiness is actually incredibly important, because they will go. These teenagers will fly the nest.
Mine's going next year.
And I think I always had a very strong sense that I needed to keep a sense of who I was for that day. I knew I could never be a full-time mum because I needed my work and I needed the intellectual stimulation of work.
But that's harder as a single mum, isn't it? Because you've got such a load of stuff to remember, sort.
Yeah.
And that emotionally you can't really take a lot of it when you get home in the evening. You can't dump that on something. I do a lot of dumping on my husband. He maybe can't help sometimes, but he can listen.
As I say, my mum is an amazing...
Beverly's mum. What's her name?
Her name's Joyce.
Joyce. You know,
can she do our Edmund for us?
She takes a lot of the emotional load. And actually, she's worked with children her whole life. She didn't work professionally paid work. She helped my dad with his business, but she always volunteered at schools. She set up play groups in a very rundown area of Manchester that we lived in. And she's devoted her life to volunteering. She's a swimming coach for 20 years. And so she is amazing with children. She's better with my children than I am with them.
Well, often other people are.
Yeah.
My eldest calls grandma her favourite relative. And she always says, and that includes you.
Yeah, she is. And she's strict with them. She runs a very tight ship. And yet she's kind of, I suppose, really empowered me to know that it's okay to say no, that my needs are important. Yeah. And I think she's given me that message, I would say, more and more as they've got older. And then she sees, you know, post-separation, she sees what I have to deal with. And she's a very good reminder of saying, no, I'll have the kids overnight. You go out. You need to go out. You know, and God, what would you do that on Mum's Day?
Do you think that in this day and age that there is any sort of stigma around single parenting, single parent families?
So.
Do you think that that's... I mean, there are 1.8 million, I think we've said.
1.8 million single parents, and a quarter of all families, according to Gingerbread, are run by one parent.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you know, I refer to my earlier point, is that I think lots of families are being run by one parent anyway.
Yeah.
Not always the mother, but predominantly it is the mum who's keeping up the... I think it's the emotional housekeeping.
Emotional labour.
The emotional labour. Mm. And it's the stuff in the head and what does see on the washing machine actually mean. It's all that minutiae that we carry around. It's not something I am paranoid about. It's not something I'm conscious of, and therefore, I never thought I would be. I never thought I would be a single mum because my parents have been married for like, I don't know, like 100 years or something. You know, they've been together since their 20s and they're in their 70s and 80s. So they are a very, very strong role model. Our family does not have divorce. James's parents are still together, my ex, and his sister is still married. My siblings are still married. So we have no blueprint for this, actually. And it's taken a long time. It took me a long time.
I think there's also that thing which lots of women talk about when I'm having big conversations about working women and women who choose to work as opposed, because, you know, a huge chunk of women have to work. They've got no choice.
Yeah.
Is your kids know what they know? They can't come home and say, well, it's much nicer in my other family where blah, blah, blah happens and everyone's mum's home baking cake. Mm. They don't know that. They don't live in that family. So they know what they know. Mm. And that, I think, means that they accept it a bit more, I think.
Maybe. I mean, my kids are just, especially maybe it's because it's at the moment with post sort of separation, but I do feel like I can never be enough. Like, there is a sense that I am never that.
That's a universal female feeling.
I just cannot be there. I could do bedtime every night and do breakfast every morning and I could be there every pick up and drop off. And it would still, you feel like as soon as you say, oh, I'm going to go out and play my netball. But Mummy, you always go out. What?
Yeah.
What? I'm never out. What are you talking about?
I do think they work out quite quickly as well how to use that.
Oh, yeah.
But you weren't, I did ask, but you weren't there.
Yeah.
They do, that is in their thinking. But I don't think, maybe you feel like you're not enough, but I never think children, I mean, I might be wrong.
Maybe.
It's all different circumstances.
It is.
But we're going to make mistakes.
Of course we are. And they are resilient, actually. And my mum has said that to me as well, just reminding me that, you know, my mum said, they'll be fine. They will be fine. I kind of needed her to say that. But I think I do give myself a bit of a hard time about not being there and feeling guilty a lot of the time. And my sister doesn't seem to suffer from the same thing. It's interesting. Even though we're both from the same household, she works very long hours.
Different personality.
But has a very hands-on husband and father.
Yeah. I mean, when people say to me, how do you do four children a full-time job? I say, well, I don't, do I? I do it with a nanny. And my husband is at home. He does doctors, dentists and all of that. I do the other bits.
It's the only way, really, that it can work. And it's the one part of feminism that we got wrong, is that we talked, and all of that narrative, whether it was, you know, Jermaine Greer and Virginia Woolf, and, you know, all these women who didn't have children talking about economic equality, go out to work. And there were no mothers in that narrative saying, and if the blokes would like to stay at home and help raise the kids, please. And so we had 30, 40 years of that narrative without anybody. And it's only really now, and the advent of the house husband, you know, in inverted commas, kind of 90s, I would say, recently.
Maybe later even.
And it's only now that we're talking about flexible working hours and dads being at home and shared care and shared parental leave. These are very, very new concepts. And until men take more responsibility at home, it will always be harder for women to have it all, in inverted commas.
Well, my husband's never been asked how he manages a full-time job and four children.
Yeah, that's right.
No one ever asked me.
No, nobody ever does. And it is a terrible double standard that still exists. which returns us to the subject of my son and whether he can pick up his clothes off the floor and I have to go.
But it is things like, you know, I just remember to your point about you're never enough. I was so conscious when mine were in junior school of wanting to be class rep for each of them 1 year. It seemed like a really big deal and that was quite important because it meant you did all the, and I was like, I mean, never going to join the PTA. I haven't got enough time to do that, but at least being class rep. And it was really hard work. It's like, you know, trying to corral people, do the bake sales, do all of that.
Yeah.
And then I talked to my son about it the other day and I said, do you remember? And he says, well, I don't remember that. And I was great.
You know, I've never been class rep.
You don't need to.
Well, I did the Christmas collection once. I'm never doing that again.
I was the school governor for a couple of years.
That sounds quite hardcore.
But actually, ironically or unexpectedly perhaps, being a school governor was less of a responsibility than being the class rep. Mm. I'd look at the class rep sending out emails about what, you know, what to wear and what day is fancy dress and what day is, you know, bring a bloody book or dress like a book character. I thought, I'm not going to be all over that. No. I'm going to let everybody down. I was just really honest. When it goes on the WhatsApp, who'd like to be class rep? I just go, no, I will be terrible and you'll all hate me. Done. But...
no one's ever asked me.
No, really? Funny that.
I had to. You're just not always at the pickups, are you? So you're not always at the drop-offs.
Thank God.
Pickups. So you don't know the thing of what's going on. Somebody came, one of the mums, she was at junior school, I think my elders came up to me and said, I've found out what you do. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. What do I do then? She said, well, you work on a fashion magazine. I mean, you just cannot tell by looking at you.
Oh!
I thought, oh God, is that why they don't ask me to be class rep? Is that what?
Was she trying to sort of say that you just look so normal? You don't look like the Devil Wears Prada?
Or was she just being a bit mean? She might have been mean to me.
Oh no, that's horrendous.
Yeah, I think that's the other thing, isn't it? When you're in the single mum zone, the other women judging women on how they parent and what they parent and what they're kind of, you know, it's the breastfeeding and it's the kind of, we're set up as a society to consistently put women against each other in the motherhood. So it's competitive, it becomes competitive. One of the reasons I didn't engage with the whole Mumsnet community was because of that awful forums of really competitive women telling us we were doing it wrong and
everyone is just winging it. We're all just doing our best.
Well, we don't know. There's no book. Then there are no rules. There's not proper guidance. I mean, I kind of think if they've got all their limbs... Yeah. And they're alive at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Done it. Good
job. Everyone's got a pulse. They've eaten something.
Nobody's crying. Well, they might be.
They're always crying. Always one of them are crying.
Yeah, grizzling crying.
You know, roughly everybody is okay. And also, our parents' generation did not sit around worrying about our mental health.
No. Well, they weren't what I call part of the whole attachment parenting trend that's been the last sort of 10, 15 years of your whole family being so child-centred, really nothing else mattered. And actually that's not been massively helpful to women. That has made women feel like they're not enough.
I totally agree.
Or to children necessarily.
No.
Because we're all now accusing them of being snowflakes.
I know, I totally agree.
So they can't win either. Just be a bit sad. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think there's possibly a middle ground.
Yeah.
In that our parents, you know, might go to the pub and leave us in the back of the car with a packet of crisps and a bottle of pop. You know,
I quite
liked
being in the pub that.
Garden.
Yeah, me too. Even in the rain in Manchester, it's still lovely. Whereas we now our social life is arranged around them. So is there a soft play at the pub? Is there a climbing frame? Or, you know, or even with the teenagers, where are they going to want to go that we will then fit in with them? Yeah. Like our parents' generation look at us with disbelief that actually they need to fit in with our needs sometimes.
And we set a curfew when they go out, the teenagers. I like them back between 11:30, midnight to know. But I know where they are. We can get cars to get them if we want. We can drive to get them. And our parents didn't know that.
No, we just went out. I remember going out in my roller boots for the day, you know, sort of probably 13, come back at tea time, spent all day going up and down the steep hills of Manchester in and
out
of
five-line motorway.
Dual carriageways, exactly, on our roller boots.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Well, thank you very much, Beverly. That was fascinating, and I hope it was helpful.
So, Lorraine, we've got to that part of the show where I want to find out what's changed your life this week, what you've been trying, and what you've been nostalgia noodling or noodling about nostalgia.
Well, what's changed my life is a website called Victoria Health. I'm going to do a massive name drop now, which Nigella told me about. I don't even have to say her surname. She's like Madonna, isn't she? Nigella told me about this website. It's absolutely brilliant. It's called Victoria Health. And when you get to midlife, your hair gets a little, well, not everyone, just me. Your hair can get a bit thinner. And there's this brilliant shampoo that I've been using, and I can feel it thickening my hair, little tufts. It's called Full Vic, F-U-L dash Vic. And the shampoo and conditioner, that has changed my life. Well, that's what I've been trying this week. I tell you mm-hmm. what's changed my life very funny, upbeat way, is a man in some Speedos on Instagram.
Are you sure? Men in Speedos? Is it funny?
He's very funny. He's a personal trainer called James Smith. He's in Australia. He's got a book coming out at some point next year. But he's really funny and irreverent, and he really calls out all that bullshit around having a thigh gap, having leaner legs, flatter tummy, all of that ridiculous social media pressurizing women to look a certain way and be a certain way. He just calls it all out and all the silly exercise things, but he does it in a very funny way. And I mean, he's the man least likely to write a recipe book involving kale or something like that. He's the unwoke trainer.
Does he have a muffin top over his Speedos?
No.
No. But men in Speedos, is that ever attractive?
Well, he's quite fit.
Oh, okay.
Fit as in healthy.
Fit and healthy.
Yeah. I've started to look at fit men on Instagram.
Okay.
Turned into my grandma. Mm-hmm. I look at The Rock a lot on Instagram as well, working out. And Marky Mark.
Okay.
F45
it's
training.
It's clearly your new hobby. It's an actual little hobby.
That's what I'm doing on the tube.
Oh, what about your nostalgia noodling?
My nostalgia noodling was brought to me by my mother this week, by my mum. I was remembering Top of the Pops, because you can see it on the telly, but then I remembered, and I can't imagine how I'd forgotten this, that I actually was in the audience
you
at Top
were
of the
not.
Pops. In 1984, my mum reminded me.
Who was on?
Well, I was just 15 and I came to London from Cornwall on my own, on the train. I mean, who lets the...
Oh, God.
Thanks, Mum.
Wild person.
Came to London and I'm really trying to remember. She says she's got the
so you can't remember
box,
who's on.
The DVD, the video, you know, remember the cassette tapes.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember Rock the Boat was on. You know that one?
Yeah.
And I remember I had a perm.
Nice.
And pink hair, a little bit of pink hair.
Was it rah-rah skirt time?
I was wearing a rah-rah skirt.
You were wearing a rah-rah skirt.
Yeah,
okay.
But that made me very nostalgic.
Oh, God, we've got to get that video out.
No, you haven't.
Yes. I'm calling your mum now to get that video. Well, should I tell you what I've
Go
been...
Go on,
oh,
do
right,
it.
Okay.
Lay it on
so
me, Trish.
So what's changed my life this week? I'm hoping this is going to change my life. I've only just started doing it. I discovered that there's special vitamins you can take that are supposed to kind of help and improve your eyesight, because for the last
what
2 years,
do? Rub the pills,
on your eyeballs. No, you can take these vitamins. It's basically
such a picture of you doing that.
Thanks. My sister told me about this, and it's some kind of B vitamin. So I went into Boots or other chemists available to have a little look, and there's a whole section on vitamins for your eyes. So I thought, right, I'm buying some of these. So I'm hoping that that's
like a mole.
A mole.
Like a mole.
Vitamins
for your eyes.
For moles. I suppose you could be. Anyway, so what I'm hoping is that's going to help me, and that's going to change my life by helping me see a bit better. And then what
can
I'm
you see me now, Trish?
I can. I can see your lovely red lipstick across the desk. Right, I am trying. Right, I'm such a dinosaur. I'm so slow to everything. But I finally had a second piercing. I had a second piercing.
No.
Actually, these...
Other nipples.
Left lobe. Actually, these headphones are sort of irritating it. But anyway, had a little tiny, tiny little diamond piercing. Ooh, and she did it with a needle.
It felt quite gruesome. Not a gun?
No, not a gun. But actually, it looks really pretty and it's a tiny, tiny little diamond. I'm very pleased with
it. Why have you had that done?
Well, I've decided it might make me feel a bit younger and a little bit less... actually, do you know why? It's because my main piercings, they've sort of gone a bit droopy. It doesn't look very nice. Do you know what I mean?
Have you got time to look at whether your piercings are droopy or not?
Yeah, probably have.
Can I tell you my piercing story?
Oh, God. Yeah, go on.
So it's a bit gruesome. My friend Vic and I met for a lunch a couple of years ago. Thought, well, what should we do this lunch? How bored are we? Popped into Topshop where they opened the piercing salon. Oh, let's get our cartilage pierced, we thought. I mean, honestly, ridiculous.
Was there alcohol involved?
No.
Oh, okay.
You'd have thought, wouldn't you? No. So went in, but everyone was getting it. My eldest daughter's had everything pierced in her ear. Went in. They do it with a massive needle.
And it's a weird tube thing.
Oh, yeah, it's hideous, absolutely hideous. But I thought it was quite a nice little bolt. Single most painful thing that has ever happened to me, and I'm putting it in the category with childbirth.
It was agony.
Didn't seem to hurt, but agony. I lasted 6 weeks. Six weeks. Couldn't put... If someone moved their hand within a metre of my ear...
Just a waft of a breeze. Oh, God.
It's bloody painful. You mustn't do it.
No,
just
I'm not going... I choose enough. I'm quite daring.
Have you got a tattoo?
No. Yes, you have, haven't you?
Yes, tiny. It's pathetic.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to get a bigger one.
I'd quite like another tattoo. Mm. Yeah. A stylish one.
Mm.
Love and hate across my... No. It's...
Spiderweb on your face.
A small daisy on my foot. It was done on Tooting Broadway. There was alcohol involved in that, I think. And I was 18. And it was going to be all over my foot. And after they did the daisy, I said, you know what, that's quite painful. I'll come back for the rest.
And then 30-odd years later, you still have my foot back. Shall I tell you my nostalgia thing? I had to buy some glasses, not eyeglasses, but drinking glasses, you know, little tumblers. And it made me think about when I was little, I'm sure you had this as well, and your dad used to come home, he'd filled up the car with petrol and he came home with loads of glasses.
From the garage, yeah.
From the garage, do you remember that? We had all sorts of cut glass tumblers and you don't get that these days, do you?
No, but I do remember that episode of Friends where they get stuck and they get all their presents from the garage.
Because they're stuck at the garage.
It's a very boring trip now, the garage.
Yeah, it really is.
Well, we've come to the end of Postcards from Midlife today. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
I hope you enjoyed the show. Next time, we'll be talking to Louise Wenner about feeling desired in your sexuality when you're approaching or in your midlife.
Now, if you'd like to send us a postcard, perhaps you have a question, or maybe you'd like to just tell us your midlife story, because everybody's got a very different story. You can find all the ways to contact us in the description below.
And if this is your first time listening to the podcast, please do subscribe. We can't wait to talk to you next week, but until then, bye-bye. Goodbye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are...
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.